crossroads of empires, battleground of the ages, city of peace and of war. This is Jerusalem, where archaeology uncovers the empires of yesterday, where prophecy decodes the headlines of today. This is where history and prophecy come alive. This is Watch Jerusalem.
Hello and welcome back to Watch Jerusalem. I'm your host, Brent Nachtigal. We are coming to you today from Jerusalem, Israel, finally after about 3 weeks off. My family was in the United States where we celebrated Sukkot, or the Feast of Tabernacles, in Florida with a number of people. One of the parts of Sukkot that we look forward to, or at least that we look forward to in the world to come, is the pure language spoken of in the book of Zephaniah, chapter 3 and verse 9. It talks about one language will be spoken all over the planet, and we explored areas. One of the messages that we heard explored how that would change humanity. And while we're not going to talk about the one pure language today on today's program, we are going to talk about language itself. I have on the line from Edstone, England, our campus over there, Mr. Christopher Eames. Hello, Chris.
Hello, Brent.
It's really great to have you on the show today to discuss this article you've written about language. It is the second article in a series of cultural universals, which looks back at the origins of certain characteristics which are purely human, and it looks back at the different genesis of them. And you take us back and you look at language in this one. I wonder if you could start out by describing what a cultural universal is, and then we'll dive into the subject of language.
Sure. Well, a cultural universal is something that is, it's the anthropological name for something that's done in some form or other between all human cultures all around the world. So it's something very, as you say, uniquely human, all human cultures around the world, and it includes various things like we'll talk about today: language, religion, music, art, families, gender roles, all of these kinds of things. Anthropological term for it, and it's quite a difficult one to explain for evolutionists, because if we are all animals, essentially, if we all descended from the animal kingdom, why are all these things specific only to humans and to all humans, as opposed to variously evolved groups or certain groups? Why is it familiar to all of us? Why do we all do these things?
So when we're talking about language, as you do in your article, how is language, if you can put it really basically, a cultural universal? How does it apply to language?
Well, language is one of those things we take for granted quite a lot. But it is something, obviously, that all human beings do. We all speak. We all have a language. And not only that, but we all have various things that make up our languages that are also cultural universals. So not only is language itself a cultural universal between all human beings, but also various elements of language. And one researcher estimated there was about 45 different cultural universal elements within language as a cultural universal. So it really is a unique human thing. Animals have a certain degree of language, you could say. They have some communication with each other, but animal language is known as a closed system. It's very finite, the amount of expressions animals can have with each other within their own family, whereas the human system is known as an open system. So there's basically an infinite number of ways we can express ourselves through language. So there's a real difference there, something really special and unusual about human language.
In your article, you talk about how there have been a number of recent studies that have looked at language, and they have come to the conclusion that language is something that is hardwired into human brains from birth or conception, basically, whenever there's a brain working and functioning, language is kind of already set up to take place inside that brain. How would you describe that and elaborate on that?
Well, yes, language is something very uniquely human, as I just mentioned, so different to the animal kingdom. And what these researchers have been learning is that not only do we grow up learning this system, this open system of language, but it's hardwired into us. So it's something very special to the human race. And so scientists have been having all of these research projects that have been finding things like we tend to arrange adjectives in the same order, even in a given made-up language. We tend to associate certain things with certain words, even if they're made up. For example, there was one test. They used two words, Baluma and Takiti, and both of those are made up words. But they asked the people taking the test which represents a round object, which represents a sharp edged object. So Baluma and Takiti, almost all people answer in the same way. Baluma represents a round object, and Takiti represents an angular edged object. So there's certain things like that. That is kind of embedded in the system. It's really interesting to read through those studies. There's a number of them that have been done that reflect the shared linguistic constraints that are hardwired at birth. It doesn't matter if they're testing with a foreign language to someone or a made-up language to someone. Also, the fact that language is translatable. Scientists have tried making up a computer-generated untranslatable language, and even that was translatable by human subjects. So really, really interesting, because animals obviously can't translate another species' language, whereas you have human language, and even a language designed to be untranslatable is translatable to humans. So there's something really special about language when it comes to the human race.
So what do these scientists then say if the studies show that in some fashion language is hardwired into our brains today? Was that always the case? Obviously, a lot of these scientists would approach from the notion of evolution in mind. And so, how can they correlate those facts? A language that's hardwired, that's uniquely human, and yet we came from animals, according to evolutionists. So, how does that work?
Right, it's a big problem, really. There's a lot of questions that go into it, and really more questions and more questions than the ones that get answered. And so there's two theories, really, for how language developed. One of them really is the better answer to the fact that it's hardwired in our brain. But anyway, there's two theories, and one is called the continuity theory. This speculates that language evolved very slowly because it is so complex. So it can't have developed suddenly. It must have been over a long period of time to get this complex. Now, this doesn't really answer why it's hardwired into the brain. So there's another theory called the discontinuity theory. And this says that because language is so complex, because it's hardwired into our brains, it must have developed suddenly. So you have these two trains of thought here, two strains of thought, one that it developed really slowly, one that it developed really suddenly. And so for those who believed it really developed suddenly, there's fewer of them that believe this theory, but they believe perhaps some kind of mutation took place in the human mind to set language, to hardwire it in our brain, and that happened suddenly. The famous American linguist Noam Chomsky, he believes this theory, and he believes that a swift mutation happened. He speculated some cosmic ray shower that kind of hardwired it into our brains. And he was speaking a little tongue in cheek about that, but he said it may not be far from the truth. So that's how they kind of try and explain why it's hardwired in our brains. The more common theory is that it developed very slowly from a series of grunts and squawks and replicating animal sounds. But that really doesn't explain why it is so uniquely human. If it developed so slowly, maybe we would expect other primates, other animals, to also have some form, at least, of language. But the fact that it's so different, the fact that it's so uniquely human, causes more and more for the second theory to gain more scientific traction, even though it has its own holes in it, the discontinuity theory.
So as far as it comes, we can see language being used in archaeology. I'd like to just jump to that because it is that you would kind of expect it to, if either one of these theories are correct, you would see a development of language over time from a basic form, at least, to a more elaborate form. Obviously, we can't know where the first time somebody spoke, because that wouldn't have any record for us. But we can know the first time that language was written down. And what is the dating on the first written documents that we have?
Sure. Well, to frame this, I will say for that first theory of evolution that it developed slowly, they believe around 2.5 million years ago it started to develop language. According to the discontinuity theory, that it developed really quickly, they believe maybe around 150,000 years ago. So now we look at the archaeological evidence for when we see the first use of written language, and that dates to 5,500 years ago.
So pretty recent compared to those other numbers.
This causes a big problem, because if, according to the first theory, we started speaking 2.5 million years ago, that's a long time. That's a lot of water to go under the bridge before we actually see evidence of language. And even according to the second theory, if we started speaking 150,000 years ago, that's a long time as well for us to get to the point of 5,500 years ago when we see the first generally accepted use of written language. So that gap there is really a problem for those who believe that we started speaking a lot earlier. That's a long time to finally get to the point of putting pen to paper, so to speak. And I will say it's not just one isolated culture that starts writing 5,500 years ago. It's a whole lot of cultures, especially around the Mesopotamian India region. We see a whole lot of different scripts being used right around that time, to the point that there's a big argument going on as to which was the one that came first, which was the language that came first. It wasn't just some isolated culture, but it was all of these different languages suddenly jumping on the scene. So that again causes problems as well for those who believe that we gradually developed speaking abilities and
different. Because you'd expect a singular language and then others that evolve from that. But as you said, as far as written documents go, and as your article brings out, I definitely would encourage people to go back to the article just to see some concrete evidence, facts and artifacts. There's pictures of these different artifacts of really early language from different nations, from different languages. And it's like all of a sudden there's no language, at least written language goes, and then we have different cultures writing their language down. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we will look at what the Bible says about the origins of language and how that matches up to the archaeological record.
This is Watch Jerusalem, where history and prophecy come alive. This is Watch Jerusalem.
Welcome back to the program. I'm talking with Watch Jerusalem writer Christopher Eames about an article he's written on the cultural universal of language. The first part of the program, we were talking about the evolutionist theories that are out there as to how language has developed and how writing has developed. And we briefly touched on the archaeological origins, or at least when the archaeological record testifies of written language. How I'd like to start out this second part of the show is to go to the Bible and see what the Bible says about the origins of language. So, Chris, how can you help us out with this?
Sure. Well, As we mentioned, according to the evolutionary account, we started off kind of squawking and grunting maybe 2.5 million years ago with language. Now, according to the Bible, we have no kind of development of language like that. The Bible doesn't speak of a development of language. It speaks of it as an already established trait of God himself. And so the first mention of language that we read about is in just the third verse of the first chapter of Genesis. It talks about, and God said, let there be light. And so we see God having a series of spoken commands in order for the world to be created, in order for the land to come up from the sea, etc. So the Bible is quite forthright about language being an attribute of God himself. And we read further on in that chapter that when God made Adam and Eve, he then spoke to them and said, be fruitful, multiply the earth, etc. So we discern from that God had made Adam and Eve with language hardwired into the brain, and he was able to right away begin speaking to them, begin communicating with them. So that's the biblical account for the spoken language.
Which is kind of interesting, just putting that together with those two theories you talked about at the beginning. One of them, the slow evolution. The other one that says, hey, something happened at some time that was completely random, that all of a sudden mankind could speak. And people that believe in this theory, obviously they have a different date to that, a long, long, long time before 5,500, 6,000 years ago. And yet that's kind of what they're saying. Similar to the biblical account, humans existed for however long, they would say, and then language was discernible and used.
Right, because they can see something very special, very uniquely human about language, something so different to the animals that surely something sudden like this, something almost biblical, would have had to have taken place. Obviously, they don't go to that extent, but something very close to what the Bible says in order for language to come about. So that's the biblical account for the spoken language. The first hint of the written language, there's a passage in Genesis 4 that talks about Adam's son Seth and them beginning to read or to publish the name of the Lord. That's a certain translation. I think it's verse 23, talks about that. So there's kind of an inference that they could read or publish at that time. May well have been earlier than that as well, but at least that's the earliest that we can point to in the Bible. So that's the first real account we have of language, Genesis chapter 1 and Genesis chapter 4 for the written account.
And then it doesn't take much longer in the Bible until we get to the infamous account about language itself, and that relates obviously to the Tower of Babel and God's decision that he would confuse the languages. Up to that point, there was a single language. That's what the Bible discusses. And then God looked down and saw mankind's ability to promulgate evil, and it was happening so fast after the flood that it was decided that the best way forward to really slow the progress of mankind towards their evil imaginations, as it says there, was to confuse the language at Babel. So how does archaeology kind of indicate the accuracy of the Bible's accounts of the Tower of Babel in Genesis chapter 9, 10, 11?
Okay, well, the Tower of Babel is one of those, to many people, fantastical accounts that surely can't have happened. It must have been a myth, something to that effect. But what archaeology has been showing is evidence that of this, extra-biblical evidence of this account. And we find these ancient stories through all kinds of cultures. The story of a Tower of Babel, confusion of languages, is almost a cultural universal in itself. It's found all across the world, Korea, Guatemala, wherever.
So what you're saying there is that the nascent of these civilizations, or they're talking about their beginning, somewhere close to the beginning of their peoples, they each have an account separate from one another that describes languages being confused.
Some form of languages being confused, some unique to their culture, but all with this kind of the central theme of languages being confused. And so the earliest accounts we have of that come from archaeological discovery in Sumer, which was the ancient Shinar, which the Bible says is the place where all of this took place. And we have the account of Enmerkar and the Lord of Errata. Now, this was an ancient account, a Sumerian epic, dated to about 2100 BC. Now, according to the Bible, the rough dating for the Tower of Babel period was around 2200 BC. So here we have a really ancient story from right around that very time period. And it talks about Enmerkar, who we've identified in a past article on Watch Jerusalem as possibly being Nimrod himself. We read of Enmerkar building a tower, and he's requesting tribute from this other person, the Lord of Errata. And he talks about the situation of language and the problem going on with language among his people. And there's just a little quote here from the ancient tablet, the text. He says, may the whole universe, the well-guarded people, address Enlil together in a single language. For the ambitious lords, for the ambitious princes, for the ambitious kings, shall change the speech in their mouths, as many as God had placed there. And so the speech of mankind is truly one. So here this leader, Enmerkar, refers to the problem of everyone speaking all these different languages, and if only we recited this incantation, then God would cause the speeches to become one as they were, and God would reverse what he had done by placing all of these different languages. So it's a really interesting account from right around the time that the biblical dating points to for the Tower of Babel, that God somehow put different languages throughout all the people, and here this leader wished all the people to be brought back together into that one language so they could continue to progress with their civilization. and this isn't an isolated account either. There's been another account, an Assyrian account that talks about the building of a language, that talks building of a tower, that talks about God confusing the language. This one's from, I believe, the 7th century BC. And so we have, on beyond that, all of these national histories corroborating this account of building of a tower and of mankind being spread out by God. Somehow God putting a different language into these people so they spread out across the world.
Well, we also have, as you bring out in your article, we have a similar story, not just of the Tower of Babel, but actually of the origin of language as well. I wonder if you could talk about that.
Sure. This comes from an Egyptian artifact known as the Shabaka Stone, and it belongs to the 8th century BC, so quite an ancient large stone inscription we have from the Egyptians, and it's a creation epic from them, and it talks about the whole earth being covered in many waters, and then God bringing the land, or the Egyptian god, Ptah, bringing the land up from those waters. And what's really interesting about this artifact is it says God spoke and the land came up from the waters. It specifically references God using the spoken word in order for the creation to come forth. So this is really a very similar corroboration of what the Bible talks about, God speaking, the land coming up from the waters, various other things being made. So a really interesting corroboration of a common idea, a common experience that had already been established. And so this points to, really, if you have a common idea like this, a common story, ancient story, it points to a common experience, a common fact, a common genesis that happened way back.
So I guess one other way to look at this would be to talk about language as we have seen it develop over the course of written history as well. I mean, recorded history, as you said, goes back 5,500 years, around the same time that the Bible talks about, or the ballpark, the Bible talks about the creation of man. And look, we have written documents. And so if there was to be an evolution of language from a simple form to a more elaborate form, we should be witnessing even that today, right? Is that what we see, or what else do we see?
Yeah, essentially, according to the evolutionary theory, we should have an amazing kind of complex language all across the world. But what we see is a constant degeneration of language. So this we see in the physical realm. This is a problem for evolution. We see things degenerating rather than improving. And we see it also in things like language, we see that degenerating as well. That's just the natural physical course of things, is to degenerate. So of course you have different languages popping up all over the place. English wasn't around thousands of years ago. That developed, but then it degenerates. And so today you have this garbled text, slang, emoji-riddled language, so different from the old King James, Shakespearean English back in the day. And according to evolution, we should constantly be seeing progress and amazing just development of language from its most primeval forms. But instead, you have a constant degeneration. And one of the earliest languages that we have in the in history is Akkadian. And this was the lingua franca of the ancient Mesopotamian people, used throughout the region, really early cuneiform script. And it should be extremely simple based on its age, one of the earliest scripts.
If we expect this to be the first writing, there's got to be some development of it, right?
But it actually turns out to be incredibly complex. People just talk about how incredibly complex the language structure is. It was only redeciphered a couple of hundred years ago. And so this is really incredible that suddenly you have language bursting on the scene, and it's not a simple language. It's incredibly complex. So where did it come from? Should be the question that people ask, but generally it's ignored. Even Hebrew, ancient Hebrew is a lot different, obviously, to modern Hebrew. Modern Hebrew is missing a lot of the complexity of ancient Hebrew. A lot has been forgotten. A lot has been lost over history. So we see that with all languages, really, a slow degeneration over time.
It is interesting. I'm just thinking about the degeneration of language over time, and so many people have spoken about how our minds think and the ability that we have to think and how that's expressed in the words or the language that's in our mind, and just seeing how language has devolved. And even today, the vocabulary that's accessible to somebody of my age is far less than what it was 500 years ago. And so how has that even affected our ability to think because of the degradation of language?
Right, and it's really quite a shame, actually. I think our sister program, The Sun Also Rises, Jeremiah Jacques, the host of that program, talks about how language really gets into how you think. Different languages really affects how different people think about things and think about the world around us. So it really is a sobering thought that with all of this language degeneration, how much less do we think critically, how much is lost, really, and we don't really know about it in terms of our mental abilities, mental faculties, compared to those ancestors of old, compared to how they thought about things and saw the world around them.
I think that's about all we have time for today, Chris. I will leave a link to your article. It's entitled, if I could pull it up here, Language, a Cultural Universal in Archaeology and the Bible. This is following on his Cultural Universal article about marriage. And there is another one coming out about clothing. Glad we have that being a cultural universal today. But I'll also leave a link to that, your article on this, and then Jeremiah Jacques' program, The Sun Also Rises, where he talks about the origins of language and how language does affect the way that we think. If you were going to sum up, Chris, just this article, it's about 3,000 words or so. If you're going to sum it up quickly, how would you do that?
I would sum it up as a fresh perspective of something we take very much for granted, something that we shouldn't take for granted, language. Language itself helps prove God's existence, and it does so through archaeology, through what the Bible says, and through exposing how ridiculous the evolutionary theory is for trying to explain it. I would explain language as a cultural universal that really shows God, essentially, God's great creative power, something that is inherently godlike in nature, the fact that language is an attribute of God himself. And so I think it's really important for us to appreciate that, because it's such a thing we take for granted on the whole.
Well, thank you very much, Chris, for coming on the show and talking with us today.
Been a pleasure.
If you'd like to go to our website and read that article, you can go to watchjerusalem.co.il. It will be there on the front page today. We'll also leave a link for it in the notes if you're listening to this on SoundCloud. If you'd like to send some feedback to us on this program or anything else in Watch Jerusalem, you can do so by writing your emails to letters@watchjerusalem.co.il. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.